Welcome to episode 231 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have our good friend, longtime contributor, playwright, columnist, poet, maker of jewelry, Professor Kitty Bell, Burbank. And we'll be talking to Kitty Bell about courage, about fear, about oppressors, about the brains in our guts, childhood and privilege, shadows and fitting in. And we'll be reflecting on what is it that we did to pass the time before the internet. We also talk a little bit about summertime and why she writes plays. Good conversation with Kitty Bell. Do tell. Today in the program. We also have an EW essay by yours truly titled Courage, a poem titled Shadow, and a short essay by Emma Rathbone titled Before the Internet, published in the most recent issue of the New Yorker magazine. This all is ensconced, interspersed within, as is always the case, several great tunes. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get to it. Episode 231 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Waiting on me, and he ain't a bitch.
courage. As my heart pumps, strong but weary, and my mind hesitates to follow another journey of query, I realize this limited time here is passing me by. I remember, fondly, laying on the grass in the summertime, watching the powder puff cumulus clouds floating across the vibrant blue sky. And I'd joyfully wonder why. Now I look up a lot less than I did back then. I look down, nervously around, empty through a ragged frown, spreading anger and fear-induced despair all too often. Not all of the time, though. I choose to fall in line, too rigidly define the truly sublime, and give credence by succumbing to the efforts of the oppressors via my self-aggrandizing righteous response, damaging those who I influence and soulfully touch. I guess I am not being so strong. This tormented species of mine for me might just be too much. I struggle to discover the courage inside of this electrically charged structure of tissue, arteries, tendons, and bones. My personal demons, I am closer to understanding. Past lives, perhaps, and the early days of this one, for certain. I truly want to become healthy before it is drawn the final curtain.
That I had before. I know things have been hurried since I came through your door. It's the same questions that I had before. Can I just make it easy? Can I run anymore? Maybe all I need is a little motivation. If I want it, I can have it. If I want it, I can have it. Maybe all I need is a little motivation. If I want it, I can have it. If I want it, I can have it.
I want it, I can
Hello. Kitty Bell, is that you? Hello.
Hi, I called you.
How dare you call EW Conundrum? I'm supposed to call you. Nice to hear
your
voice.
That.
No problem. Ladies and gentlemen, Kitty Bell, longtime contributor to Troubadours and Rock On Tours. She's a playwright, a columnist, a poet, a maker of jewelry. How else do you want to describe yourself?
Well, that's plenty.
That's a lot.
So
you ready to go?
Yeah.
All
right. Where are we going?
Well, first we're going to talk about courage.
I love it.
Courage. What is that? I mean, what does courage mean to you? How do we display courage? Have you seen any courage lately?
Courage means you know that there's a good chance you're going to fail and you do it anyway.
That's a good definition. Yeah. Have you experienced a need for courage as of late?
All the time. Yeah. I have a new job that's paying the bills in between teaching gigs and art side jobs. And it requires a lot of courage, I'm finding. You have to be brave and, you know, jump right in there and deal with people. And they might yell at you and they might be upset, but you just do your best.
You mean generally speaking or with your new job?
Well, I guess I was speaking about the job in particular, but generally speaking also.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, day to day, if you're really going to engage and embrace your life and those situations and people that you have to, I guess, deal with, if that's not a positive
enough. Yeah, I mean, you just need to make decisions.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not going to be right. But somebody needs to make decisions. So you just do it. And you just guess. And you try things. And you cross your fingers and hold your breath and hope that they're not all going to be wrong.
That's courage.
You know? I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, because fear is not acting, you know, it is paralysis.
Right.
So if anytime you're, you know, willing to take that responsibility, that's courage.
And, you know, when you're not acting out of fear, that's terrible. Of course, paralysis. Also, I think sometimes, and correct me if you disagree, we make decisions that are based on fear, which oftentimes I would state for, you know, pretty confidently are the wrong decisions.
Not taking a
risk, or not supporting something or someone you should support. That is cowardly or fear based. Not to judge, but I mean, why do you want to have courage then? Why do we need to have courage?
To progress. Because we need to take risks to have things change in a positive way sometimes. I mean, if we keep doing things the same way that we've always done them, because we're afraid of changing things, then we're more likely to become stagnant and not succeed and not, you know.
Yeah. I hear myself in your background. I hear my echo. It's freaking me out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have you on my laptop.
Yeah, I don't know if you could do anything about that, but whatever.
I can turn the volume down.
Yeah, maybe.
Is that better?
Yeah, I don't hear myself now.
Okay, good.
I only like to hear one voice in my head, not too many. Now, you know, let's take this on a collective level. I mean, there are
okay.
I don't know how political you have been lately. I know you're very social-minded. You in the collective, as part of the collective, don't you think it's very important to have courage to make certain that decisions are made, behavior is seen and supported that helps most everyone?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that we need our elected officials to be able to do, is to not always make the choice that they want to make for themselves, but to make a choice that is best for us or for the greater good. You know, so you have a lot of people who can get you to do one thing, but you need to be able to have courage to tell that person, you know, I appreciate your cause, but these people are counting on me to do this, and this is what they need, not what you're trying to get me to do.
Yeah, like lobbyists, people of that ilk who come in to those who have power in Congress.
Yeah. It's freaky. I had a lot of jobs recently, and I narrowed it down because it was too much work and too many hours. But this one part-time job I had was at a cancer center, and the pharmaceutical companies buy everyone lunch twice a week.
I wonder why.
And what's that?
I wonder why.
Because they're making a lot of money, clearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's clinical trials, and they're trying to make new drugs that are more effective and are help people. And ultimately, I mean, these things, if they can't always save lives, you know, they maybe extend life or give them a better quality of life for as much time as they have left. And those are admirable things. Those are good things. But there was just something that freaked me out about the fact that somebody was making that much money off of sick people, that I just couldn't get over it.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to hear me support the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, you're right. They make a lot of money. And oftentimes, I think they bilk the public. I mean, they do great things. You're right. Pharmaceutical companies come up, well, the scientists do.
Right.
With drugs that save people's lives. But then once it becomes a commodity, that's when the business aspect comes to the forefront. And oftentimes, you know, they make more money than they need to make. And they won't give medicine away. I mean, they have to keep their companies fiscally solvent. I understand that. But sometimes I think it's obscene how much money they make. And also, a lot of people won't get medicine that need it just because they don't have the money. That doesn't seem ethical. I mean, I know we live in a capitalist society and all that, but still, when people are dying and sick because they don't
have
money.
And part of my job was supposed to be actually to help raise money for a fund that helped people who needed financial assistance. But then the whole purpose of that was kind of like a marketing thing, like a PR thing. I don't know. There was just something about it that, like, for me, you know, I ended up taking a job that was less lucrative that I felt better about, you know? And some people would say that that would be a kind of courage to walk away from something. That it's just, I mean, sometimes you have to do that to say, this isn't right. And I don't care if, you know, you think it's better for me. I have to do what's right for myself. And
on a spiritual, intellectual, soulful level.
Yeah. Knowing that people aren't necessarily going to understand that choice, but you have to make the right choices for you that I think we talked about that before, right? That the Greeks thought that our brains were in our guts.
Yep, they did.
Uh-huh. I mean, you know, you feel it. It's that gut instinct that tells you what to do. And are you going to listen to it, or are you going to be more concerned about what other people think about you?
Well, yes. And in our society, really, people will think there's something wrong with you if you're walking away from a highly lucrative position for something that, you know, is as abstract as ethics or you know, your conscience or what have you. That troubles me. That's the norm. You know, that's the default or the reference. What the heck's wrong with you? You could be making all this money. Someone else is going to make it if you don't make it.
Yeah. Let them.
Yeah. Now, that brings me to oppressors. Another topic I wanted to get into. Oppressors. Well, we want to run with that. I could put stuff out there, but I'd like
What are you thinking?
Well, I believe there are so many oppressors in our society, you know, of all types. I go back to governments. I go back to people right now in particular who are in power they come out and they misinform and they smoke and mirrors to try to divert attention to what the real heart of the matter, the real substance of the matter is, so that they could get what they want, and they keep everybody else or the folks who they don't want to find out, it seems,
right,
in check, or they keep them down or
yeah. How conscious and intentional do you think that is?
I think it's very conscious.
Do you? Like, we're going to keep these people down.
Yes, I think it's conscious. I do.
Oh, that's too bad.
And even if it isn't conscious, they need to know that's what's happening. I think you don't think there are intentional oppressors?
I think there's ways that we justify things, and that there's levels of privilege I think there's very few people that are actually trying to oppress people. Like, that's not their goal. Their goal is something else.
But shouldn't they know then? I mean, is it okay if they don't know that they're oppressing people?
Well, we don't think it is. But people have a way of justifying their actions so that they can live with themselves. We were just talking about that with, like, do you think the drug dealers feel bad when these people overdose? And, probably they can't, because if they did, they wouldn't be able to keep doing what they're doing. So there's a way that they justify it, saying, well, if they didn't get it from me, they're going to get it from someone else or something like that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they can't do it. Like, I don't think that most people are that bad. It's just that they've managed to construct a delusion of that allows them to act that way, to justify what they're doing. Or they've been raised to believe, you know, in their system that it's honorable somehow, whereas we don't see it that way because we are on the other side or something.
Yeah, maybe if we were on the same side they are, if we were reaping the rewards of oppression and privilege, then we'd find a way to delude ourselves too?
Yeah, if we were taught by our parents that this is the way that society is supposed to be, and that, you know, being as part of this privileged class that, I mean, I know I've read things where people that have that sort of sense of entitlement, like, they think, like, okay, so maybe they worked hard and they see that their success is because that they worked hard. But what they don't see is that they also got lucky, and they discount that as a factor in their success, and they want to take credit for it. You know, they don't see, well, I was in the right place at the right time, or my dad knew this guy and he got me this job. And, you know, they don't see that aspect of it as much. And I think it's a kind of same thing with these oppressors, that they see the honorable and they don't see the damage.
Yeah. And perhaps they see survival of the fittest. That right. sort of outlook.
Right. Yeah, well, I've worked hard. I deserve this, and they believe that myth that if they work hard enough, they can get out of that situation. They believe that, I mean, they don't see the science. Whereas if you grow up in poverty, your brain isn't going to be as fully developed, or you're going to have these other disadvantages. They don't see those things. They don't believe that, because that would make it more difficult for them to do what they do. So they believe a different story.
Everybody has an equal chance an opportunity. And
that's right. And so true. They believe that. They believe that if you want it hard enough, if you work hard enough, you can be as successful as I can. Even though that the odds are, you know, terrible if you didn't go to one of these schools, or if you didn't, you know, have these families or grow up in these communities with these connections, you know, it's stacked against you. They don't want to believe that that's true, they don't want to believe that they have an advantage that has something other to do than with their abilities and talents and intelligence and whatever.
So would you say then, those who are privileged and don't see these things lack the courage we were talking about earlier?
Lack the courage to...
I don't know, to see what really is out there, to understand the disparity, the lack of a fair society, and everybody getting an equal shake and all.
I guess. I mean, is it a lack of courage, or is it just like, why would they?
Well, because it would hurt their sense of self and their sense of being better and dominant. They don't have the courage to see that. I mean, if their gut, going back to the gut, they don't have that gut instinct to say, well, there's something mm-hmm. wrong here. Or do they not right. have the courage to allow that to
right. I
penetrate.
Think we're all guilty of it to a certain extent. Like, am I really investigating everything I buy to make sure that it wasn't manufactured in a sweatshop first? No. Should I? Yeah, probably.
So hard.
But do I? No, yeah. Not practically. Because right. it's just, I don't have the time, you know?
Now, childhood.
Yes.
We go to childhood.
When we didn't have to worry about things like this.
Exactly. Right. When you look at children and the way that they view the world and themselves, I mean, I think a lot of children, you could say, are immature and thus selfish, and also their emotional development, their intellectual development keeps them from being able to see certain things, of course. So, I mean, they're not perfect children, but at mm-hmm. the same time, they do have an openness, I think.
Right.
And is that because they don't have the, well, some children do, I shouldn't say this, but maybe they are insulated from all of the troubles and problems and pressures that adults are, therefore is it because they haven't been indoctrinated yet into the what we say is the normal way of approaching things and such? I mean,
because their ideals haven't been crushed yet.
Maybe. Right.
That idealism is great. Yeah. We need that. We need to see that in young people.
Yeah,
it's amazing how quickly they become shy, how quickly they become fearful. You know, I work with kids at the United Neighborhood Center in the youth theater program.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And so many of them so early are afraid. They're afraid of people laughing at them or not liking them or making fun of them or being, you know, of appearing foolish when, you know, you look at them and you're like, but you're just a kid. You should be having fun. You shouldn't be afraid of those things yet. But it happens so fast.
Well, a lot of these children, do they have similar backgrounds in terms of socioeconomics? and family life and things?
It's a little all over the place, but I mean, it's probably safe to say that none of them are extremely well off. But otherwise, I mean, the only thing that they might have in common is, you know, an economic bracket.
And do you think that has something to do with it? The level of shyness, or is it just about human beings wanting, especially at that age? I think humans always want to do this. Is it about fitting in more so?
Mm-hmm.
The fear of being tagged different?
Yeah, I guess, and that can happen as soon as you get to school, I guess. I mean, I guess when I think back, like I remember in second grade when we moved from California to Pennsylvania, like not doing well in my first 4 months in Dunmore, you know, like the kids were not kind, you know, and that was in 1980, 1979 or something. So that it's not like that's new or anything.
No, it's the human condition to a certain extent, human development.
Yeah.
So you moved from where in California?
Where did we move from?
Yeah.
The Bay Area.
Man, you could be in the Bay Area and you're here.
It's too expensive. Are you kidding? Who can live there?
Well, maybe if you stayed there, you'd be, you know, very wealthy.
Yeah, we couldn't afford to live there in 1979 is why we moved back to Pennsylvania.
Kitty Bell here on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. Playwright, columnist, poet, professor, maker of jewelry, community activist, so many things.
My new boss calls me professor.
Well, that's a good title. That's apropos.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's a great thing to be called.
Uh-huh.
I want to ask you, have you reflected on the one question I texted you? What did we do to pass the time before the internet?
What did we do? Wow. I do the same things now.
Good for you.
Right?
You're not a slave to your smartphone, to social media, all that?
No. I mean, I use social media to stay in touch with people, you know, because I don't see people in person as much as I should. And I do want to stay in contact with them, but I can't be on there too much, you know?
Well, what happens?
We used to play outside a lot as kids anyway.
Yeah.
I still do. I go for walks. You know, I take pictures of things.
And post them on Instagram automatically or Facebook?
No. Sometimes. If I think it looks really cool and somebody else might like to see what I saw, but I don't have that compulsion to like put everything out there.
We used to play cards a lot. Play cards and then kickball and ride our bicycles.
Yeah. We used to like just go exploring in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
Build forts. Yeah. Yeah. Dig up earth and make clay pots and cook them in the bonfire at the lake. We used to do that. Just make up games. We made up games. But like, if you think about them now, it's like, why? We spent hours like playing these games that didn't even make any sense. But
yeah,
they kept us entertained.
You know, a lot of children can be very creative and have fun just kicking a can. We used to play a game, kick the can, it was called. Just kick the freaking can.
We used to do that too, yeah. In the alley, yeah.
Yeah, kick the can in the alley. You know, is that, do you think?
It, like, did that had rules and stuff, but I don't even remember what they were.
It did have rules, yeah.
Or, not a lot.
No, and you change them as you go, you know.
Yeah. With a lot of games. We played a lot of board games. We watched some TV, but really not even that much when I think about it compared to all the other things that we did.
Well, do you think that way of spending time is better than spending more of the time that you might have spent doing those types of things now on an electronic device or in front of the television watching Netflix or what have you?
I mean, if that's all you do, yeah. Definitely.
Why?
Because it uses more and different parts of your brain, and because it's interaction with people.
Real.
And, yeah, and in the real world, you know? There's something about, like, I guess when we watch those, like, television, our brains think that we're experiencing what we're watching, but it's in a different way. It's, you know, I don't know.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I know. Even when I
just kind of flatlined there for a minute. Sorry.
No. It sounded like to me like you're just reflecting, as you usually.
I kind of was. I just zoned out, and then I heard fireworks, and I was like, "What? What's going on? When am I?
When am I?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is totally different to get together with people and interact in person. And then it is on social media, electronically, or through fiction or what have you on television.
Yeah, I'm really big about the use of our senses. You know, we have all of these things, like things, especially with the way, like touching things, the way things feel. Like, it's really important to me. And you don't get that. I mean, you kind of do. Part of your, like, you can imagine, like, if somebody touches something cold in a movie, your brain imagines what that feels like to touch something cold. But it's not the same as, if you don't actually touch something that's cold, then you don't know what it feels like. You know? You need to know what it feels like to go for a walk in soggy grass and have your shoes get soaked. You need to know what it feels like, you know, to have real experiences.
Yeah, I agree.
Or your brain doesn't know how to respond when it sees a virtual one.
Right, the reference. The real,
it's like hearing a vocabulary word that you don't know, or a foreign language or something.
That's a good comparison. Yeah, and I've been talking to people face-to-face, looking at each other, in your eyes and hearing mm-hmm. your voice, there's so much more there in terms of your senses, as you mentioned, and just you know, the intangible interaction of being in the presence of other people is mm-hmm. so much deeper, so much more substantive. You feel your humanity,
right? That's why I make plays.
That's why you make plays.
Yeah, theater, getting those people in a room together and having them all experience something that's happening in front of them in the same room. I mean, you can feel what the actor is feeling if they do it well. You know?
Yeah.
The whole point.
I've seen some of your plays and I love them. You do good work. White Matter, the last time we were on, we talked, it was right before White Matter Surplus, and mm-hmm. you just had another run of it last weekend. Did that go well?
It did. As always, you always wish that more people had gotten to see the work, but it was, you know, I learned kind of something from it. I mean, the whole point is that you can't really, I don't personally think you could become a better writer, a better playwright, unless you see the work staged. Because you don't really learn what you need to learn about what works, what doesn't work in your writing if you don't see it produced. So it was important for me to do this play this year. Because I think it's the best one I've written so far, which makes sense because you get better with practice. And I'm, you know, starting this graduate school program in like 6 weeks. And I want to get the most out of that, you know? So I'm going to be writing plays, and I really needed to see that produced so that I can take that with me into becoming better in the classroom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing some more of your work. And
yeah. It's hard because you want to write things that matter to people, but it also has to matter to you.
Oh, yes.
You know, so the trick there is trying to, like, you know, find something that's worth spending all of that time on in your own heart, in your own head, and having it be personal, but having it be something that can also matter to other people.
Yeah, transcendence.
Yeah, and that shouldn't be hard, but sometimes it feels like it is. Sometimes it feels like there's so much out there. Like, why does anybody need to hear what I have to say? But you can't let that stop you. I guess that's where that courage comes in. Do it anyway. You know, maybe nobody does need to hear it, but what else are you going to do? Not do it? You know?
Yeah. Well, we came full circle. Kitty Bell, back to courage. It's so nice to have you on the program. We're just about out of time this go around. Any final thoughts for the listeners before we say ciao?
I guess just I hope everybody can get out there and experience as much summer as they can. You know?
You have any
what
big
it
plans?
Smells like, what it feels like, what it tastes like. Just absorb it into your skin.
That's a plan. That's a good
plan.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, that's my plan.
And anything you want to share in terms of social media or any projects coming up?
No. I just finally got everything calmed down enough. We have Arts on the Square coming up the last Saturday of July. So that should be a good time. Yeah. That should be a real good time. I'm looking forward to just kind of getting out into the arts community again. And I was just so busy working for a while. And before that, so busy trying to line up the work that I just kind of fell out of the loop of being able to go out and experience things. Just be relaxed enough to have a good time, you know? So finally now I've gotten all my ducks in a row and I can kind of just have a routine again, which is really great. And I went out and I saw an exhibit at AFA that I had missed when it opened, but I saw it and I ended up buying a painting, which was really exciting because I haven't really bought a painting in a long time, but I loved the artwork so much. I just had to, I didn't have to have one, but I decided that if anybody has a reaction that's that strong, like, and you can afford to support the artist to show them that their work meant that much to you, you should do it.
I agree.
So I had to, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy the painting. Enjoy the summer. And I hope to see you out and about.
Yes.
Thanks for being on the program. Yeah, it would be. Let's do that.
Okay.
And thanks for taking the time out after a long day to be on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I truly appreciate it, Kitty Bell.
I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Ciao.
coming down my street. If I could pick a card, she'd have me beat. And you know, I get so jacked up right on my feet. Son, you have to wait. And for anything you really want, you just have to wait. And I asked my mama just how long, she couldn't say.
Essay by Emma Rathbone titled Before the Internet, published in the June 26, 2017 edition of The New Yorker magazine. Before the internet, you would just sit in an armchair with the book open on your lap, staring into space or staring at a decorative broom on the wall, kind of shifting back and forth between those two modes of being. Before the internet, you might take it upon yourself to do a drawing. You'd quietly start sketching something in a notebook, not sure what it was, but you'd let inspiration guide you, and then whoop, turns out you'd drawn a squiggly alligator with a cockeyed approach. Before the internet, you'd have yawning summer afternoons when you'd flop down on one couch, then flop down on another, then decide to craft a fake FBI card. You'd get some paper from your dad's office, copy the FBI logo and your signature, laminate it with scotch tape, put it in your wallet, take it out of your wallet, look at it, then put it back in your wallet with a secretive smile. It was a heady time. You'd be in some kind of art center, wearing roomy overalls, looking at a tray of precious gems, and you'd say, "That's cat's eye." And your friend would say, "Nope, that's opal." And you'd say, "That's definitely cat's eye." And there would be no way to look it up, no way to prove who was right, except if someone had a little booklet. "Anyone got a little booklet?" you'd ask, looking around. "Is there a booklet on this shit?" Then you'd walk outside and squint at the sky. Just you in your body, not tethered to any network, adrift by yourself in a world of strangers in the sunlight. Before the internet, you could move to a new state and no one at school would know anything about you. You'd have no online history. You could be anyone. You would lean against the lockers with a faraway expression on your face and let people assume whatever they wanted. Like that you were a girly girl, but could also be a tomboy. Or that back in your hometown, you'd been friends with a bunch of crows. And everyone assumed that if they saw a crow, it probably knew you, because you had some kind of understanding with crows, owing to undefined telepathic abilities that made you look troubled now and then, but also really important. And if anyone wanted to track down an old friend of yours and write her an actual letter to find out if any of this was true, well, best of luck to them. Before the internet, you could laze around on a park bench in Chicago reading some Dean Koontz, and that would be a legit thing to do, and no one would ever know you had done it unless you told them. Before the internet, if you were in need of some facts, you might actually decide to consult an old person, like the one living in your finished basement. But then you'd find yourself watching The Bridge on the River Kwai, which you agreed to do because the old person asked in such a fragile way that you couldn't say no. About 10 minutes in, you'd say you needed some water, then wander up to the kitchen, where you'd get caught up staring at a refrigerator magnet. Then, for no reason, you'd do a little dance. You'd wondered if you should expand that dance right then and there. Maybe I'll direct music videos, you'd say to yourself. But you'd have no way to follow up or to look it up. You'd just be standing in the deafening quiet of your kitchen at midday, alone with your thoughts. Should I test out these pens on this turquoise pad? You'd ask yourself, staring at some pens by the phone. Instead, you'd take a sip of your drink and say, ah, like a person in a commercial. Then you'd go do that in front of a mirror to see how it looked, because that's what it was like before the internet. You made your own fun.
Happy hour in those high heel boots, splitting checks for some massive groups, red teeth and the bad back blues. The sketchy truth about the vineyard youth, can't slow down but her car's in the shop. She can't pay up but she still wants to rock. She can't listen to the people talk, just stares beyond their shoulders, waits until their mouths stop moving. She knows this guy who likes to fool around, he's got a big house up in Tangletown. He claims he used to have a family, falls asleep way too easily. She walks around once he passes out, calls a car and collects what's hers. Takes a bottle when she's walking out, she's working at the corp when she gets back into her building. Sit and drink until the sun comes up, sleep it off and then it starts again. Go to work and when she's getting off, tries to hang around some finer things, tries to hang around some finer things. Keeps his eyes on the sales reports, keeps in shape with the racket sports, tennis shorts on the tennis courts. He lost his shirt in a bad divorce, lawyers came and they scraped him away. He kept the house but he still lost his way. Goes to work but they take half his pay, at least a car that makes it look okay. The broker said that he should sell the wine, they got this guy that can arrange a buy. But there's a girl that sometimes comes to him, she seems to really like the finer things. Once a week or so he takes her out, she picks a place that's always new and loud. He can barely even hear her talk, just stares beyond her shoulder, waits until her mouth stops moving. Sit and drink until they fall asleep, he wakes up and he's alone again. Goes to work and then when he gets off, tries to hang around some finer things, tries to hang around some finer things. off, tries to hang around some finer things, sit and drink until the sun comes up, sleep it off and then it starts again. Go to work and when she's getting off, tries to hang around some finer things, tries to hang around some finer things, tries to hang around some finer things.
Shadow. As I scribble these words on paper, the sun finally crafts a shadow, outlining the tip of this pen and my fingers holding it, knuckles, hair, and the subtle curve of my thumbnail. Can you feel the bright energy and deep warmth? Can you hear the birds tweet up and down the street? It's lovely, isn't it?
Gimme, 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 gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme, 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 gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme, 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 gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme, 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 gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. Gimme that swing. My heart is giving you love. Try not to need you so much. You were the one right from the start. Your eyes were saying the same.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, and all in between and otherwise. Thank you so much for listening to episode 231 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours. It's a pleasure to produce this show for you and with all of these great individuals that make it so special. And those folks this week are, first and foremost, our good friend Kitty Bell, Thank you so much for sharing your insight and a bit about what you're experiencing in your life as an artist and as an everyday wonderful human being. I also like to thank these musical artists, but first, actually, Emma Rathbone, the writer for the wonderful essay titled Before the Internet, and these wonderful artists, Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli, Hopalong, Benjamin Booker, Mink DeVille, Craig Finn, Sissy Redgwick, as well as Branford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard, too. Until next week, enjoy this one. Take care.